Tired of chasing the latest weight loss trends? It's time to cut through the noise and discover a sustainable solution with Robody. Say goodbye to extremes and hello to real, lasting results. Having personally navigated my recent weight loss journey through willpower, calorie counting, and probably too much caffeine, I know the struggle. If I were eligible for Robody today, I wouldn't hesitate to embrace a scientifically backed approach to achieve my goals. Ro provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. The Robody program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Say goodbye to the roller coaster of weight loss and hello to sustainable results with Robody. Go to ro.co/snoozecast. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/snoozecast. Snoozecast, the podcast designed to help you fall asleep. Find us on snoozecast.com and follow us on Instagram at snoozecast to find behind-the-scenes content. If you enjoy our show, please write a review on the Apple Podcasts app. Also, share us with a friend. This episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters and by Excellent Breakfasts. Tonight, we'll read a selection of mouse-featured Beatrix Potter stories, starting with Johnny Town Mouse and followed with The Tale of Two Bad Mice and The Tale of Mrs. Tittlemouse. This episode is dedicated to our patron Donna, who requested Aesop's Fables. While we haven't found a good public domain version of the original fables for Snoozecast, this story by Potter is inspired by one of his fables. Beatrix Potter was an English writer, illustrator, natural scientist, and conservationist, best known for her children's books featuring animals, though Potter was typical of women of her generation. In having limited opportunities for higher education, her study and watercolors of mushrooms led to her being widely respected in the field of mycology. In all, Potter wrote 30 books, the best known being her 23 children's tales. Let's get cozy. Close your eyes. Relax your body into the softness of your bed. Now, take a few deep breaths. Johnny Town Mouse was born in a cupboard. Timmy Willie was born in a garden. Timmy Willie was a little country mouse who went to town by mistake in a hamper. The gardener sent vegetables to town once a week by carrier. He packed them in a big hamper. The gardener left the hamper by the garden gate, so that the carrier could pick it up when he passed. Timmy Willie crept in through a hole in the wickerwork, and after eating some peas, Timmy Willie fell asleep. He awoke in a fright while the hamper was being lifted into the carrier's cart. Then there was a jolting and a clattering of horses' feet. Other packages were thrown in for miles and miles. Jolt, jolt, jolt. And Timmy Willie trembled amongst the jumbled up vegetables. At last, the cart stopped at a house where the hamper was taken out, carried in, and set down. The cook gave the carrier sixpence. The back door banged, and the cart rumbled away. But there was no quiet. There seemed to be hundreds of carts passing by. Dogs barked. Boys whistled in the street. The cook laughed. The parlor maid ran up and down stairs. And a canary sang like a steam engine. At last, the cart stopped at a house. Presently, the cook opened the hamper and began to unpack the vegetables. Timmy Willie, who had lived all his life in a garden, was almost frightened to death. Presently, the cook opened the hamper and began to unpack the vegetables. Out sprang the terrified Timmy Willie. Up jumped the cook on a chair, exclaiming, "A mouse! A mouse! Call the cat! Fetch me the poker, Sarah!" Timmy Willie did not wait for Sarah with the poker. He rushed along the skirting board till he came to a little hole, and in he popped. He dropped half a foot and crashed into the middle of a mouse dinner party, breaking three glasses. "Who in the world is this?" inquired Johnny Town Mouse. But after the first exclamation of surprise, he instantly recovered his manners. With the utmost politeness, he introduced Timmy Willie to nine other mice, all with long tails and white neckties. Timmy Willie's own tail was insignificant. Johnny Town Mouse and his friends noticed it, but they were too well-bred to make personal remarks. Only one of them asked Timmy Willie if he had ever been in a trap. The continual noise upstairs made him so nervous. The dinner was of eight courses. Not much of anything, but truly elegant. All the dishes were unknown to Timmy Willie, who would have been a little afraid of tasting them. Only he was very hungry and very anxious to behave with company manners. The continual noise upstairs continued to make him nervous, so much so that he dropped a plate. "Never mind, they don't belong to us," said Johnny. It should be explained that two young mice who were waiting on the others went skirmishing upstairs to the kitchen between courses. Several times they had come tumbling in, squeaking and laughing. Timmy Willie learnt with horror that they were being chased by the cat. His appetite failed. He felt faint. "Try some jelly," said Johnny Town Mouse. "No? Would you rather go to bed? I'll show you a most comfortable sofa pillow." The sofa pillow had a hole in it. Johnny Town Mouse quite honestly recommended it as the best bed, kept exclusively for visitors. But the sofa smelt of cat. Timmy Willie preferred to spend a miserable night under the fender. It was just the same next day. An excellent breakfast was provided for mice accustomed to eat bacon, but Timmy Willie had been reared on roots and salad. Johnny Town Mouse and his friends racketed about under the floors and came boldly out all over the house in the evening. One particularly loud crash had been caused by Sarah tumbling downstairs with a tea tray. There were crumbs and sugar and smears of jam to be collected in spite of the cat. Johnny Town Mouse and his friends racketed about under the floors all throughout that evening. Timmy Willie longed to be at home in his peaceful nest in a sunny bank. The food disagreed with him. The noise prevented him from sleeping. In a few days, he grew so thin that Johnny Town Mouse noticed it and questioned him. He listened to Timmy Willie's story and inquired about the garden. "It sounds rather a dull place. What do you do when it rains?"
"When it rains, I sit in my little sandy burrow and shell corn and seeds from my autumn store. I peep out at the throttles and blackbirds on the lawn and my friend Robin. And when the sun comes out again, you should see my garden and the flowers, roses and pinks and pansies. No noise except the birds and bees and the lambs in the meadows."
"Oh, there goes that cat again," exclaimed Johnny Town Mouse. When they had taken refuge in the coal cellar, he resumed the conversation.
"I confess I'm a little disappointed. We have endeavored to entertain you, Timothy William."
"Oh, yes, yes, you've been most kind, but I do feel so ill," said Timmy Willie.
"It may be that your teeth and digestion are unaccustomed to our food. Perhaps it might be wiser for you to return in the hamper."
"Oh? Oh!" cried Timmy Willie.
"Why, of course, for the matter of that, we could have sent you back last week," said Johnny, rather huffily. "Did you not know that the hamper goes back empty on Saturdays?"
So Timmy Willie said goodbye to his new friends and hid in the hamper with a crumb of cake and a withered cabbage leaf. And after much jolting, he was set down safely in his own garden. Sometimes on Saturdays, he went to look at the hamper lying by the gate, but he knew better than to get in again, and nobody got out, though Johnny Town Mouse had half promised a visit. Timmy Willie sat by his burrow, warming his little fur coat and sniffing the smell of violets and spring grass. This was after the winter passed and the sun came out again. Timmy Willie had nearly forgotten his visit to town. When up the sandy path, all spick and span
With a brown leather bag came Johnny Townmouse. Timmy Willie received him with open arms.
"You've come at the best time of year. We'll have herb pudding and sit in the sun."
"It's a little damp," said Johnny Townmouse, who was carrying his tail under his arm out of the mud.
"What is that fearful noise?"
he started violently.
"That?" said Timmy Willie. "That's only a cow. I'll beg a little milk. They're quite harmless. Unless they happen to lie down upon you. How are all our friends?"
Johnny's account was rather middling. He explained why he was paying his visit so early in the season. The family had gone to the seaside for Easter. The cook was doing spring cleaning on board wages, with particular instructions to clear out the mice. There were 4 kittens, and the cat had killed the canary.
"They say we did it, but I know better," said Johnny Townmouse.
"Hey, whatever is that fearful racket?"
"Oh, that's only the lawnmower. I'll fetch some of the grass clippings presently to make your bed. I'm sure you'd better settle in the country, Johnny."
"We shall see by Tuesday week. The hamper's stopped while they're at the seaside."
"I'm sure you'll never want to leave this town again," said Timmy Willie.
But he did. He went back in the very next hamper of vegetables. He said it was too quiet. One place suits one person. Another place suits another person. For my part, I prefer to live in the country, like Timmy Willie. The Tale of 2 Bad Mice. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful doll's house. A very beautiful house indeed. It was red brick with white windows. And it had real muslin curtains and a front door and a chimney. It belonged to 2 dolls called Lucinda and Jane. At least, it belonged to Lucinda, but she never ordered meals. Jane was the cook, but she never did any cooking, because the dinner had been bought ready-made in a box full of shavings. There were 2 red lobsters and a ham, a fish, a pudding, and some pears and oranges. They would not come off the plates, but they were extremely beautiful. One morning, Lucinda and Jane had gone out for a drive in the doll's baby carriage. There was no one in the nursery, and it was very quiet. Presently, there was a little scuffling, scratching, in the corner near the fireplace, where there was a hole under the skirting board. Tom Thumb put out his head for a moment and then popped it in again. Tom Thumb was a mouse. A minute afterwards, Hunka Munka, his wife, put her head out too, and when she saw that there was no one in the nursery, she ventured out on the oilcloth under the coal box. The doll's house stood at the other side of the fireplace. Tom Thumb and Hunka Munka went cautiously across the hearthrug. They pushed the front door. It was not fast, creeping up to the house. Tom Thumb and Hunka Munka went upstairs and peeped into the dining room. Then they squeaked with joy. Such a lovely dinner was laid out upon the table. There were tin spoons and lead knives and forks and two dolly chairs, all so convenient. Tom Thumb set to work at once to carve the ham. It was a beautiful, shiny yellow streaked with red. The knife crumpled up and hurt him, so he put his finger in his mouth. "It's not boiled enough. It's hard. You have a try, Hunka Munka." Hunka Munka stood up in her chair and chopped at the ham with another lead knife. "Well, it's as hard as the hams at the cheesemonger's," said Hunka Munka. The ham broke off the plate with a jerk and rolled under the table. "Let it alone," said Tom Thumb. "Give me some fish, Hunka Munka." Hunka Munka tried every tin spoon in turn. The fish was glued to the dish. Then Tom Thumb lost his temper. He put the ham in the middle of the floor and hit it with the tongs and with the shovel. Bang, bang, smash, smash. The ham flew all into pieces, for underneath the shiny paint, it was made of nothing but plaster. Then there was no end to the rage and disappointment of Tom Thumb and Hunka Munka. They broke up the pudding, the lobsters, the pears, and the oranges. As the fish would not come off the plate, they put it into the red-hot, crinkly paper fire in the kitchen, but it would not burn either. Tom Thumb went up the kitchen chimney and looked out at the top. There was no soot. While Tom Thumb was up the chimney, Hunka Munka had another disappointment. She found some tiny canisters upon the dresser labeled rice, coffee, etc. But when she turned them upside down, there was nothing inside except red and blue beads. Hunka Munka dumped them all out. Then those mice set to work to do all the mischief they could, especially Tom Thumb. He took Jane's clothes out of the chest of drawers in her bedroom, and he threw them out of the top floor window. But Hunka Munka had a frugal mind. After pulling half the feathers out of Lucinda's bolster, she remembered that she herself was in want of a feather bed. With Tom Thumb's assistance, she carried the bolster downstairs and across the hearth rug. It was difficult to squeeze the bolster into the mouse hole, but they managed it somehow. Then Hunka Munka went back and fetched a chair, a bookcase, a birdcage, and several small odds and ends. The bookcase and the birdcage refuse to go into the mouse hole. Hunkamunka left them behind the coal box and went to fetch a cradle. Hunkamunka was just returning with another chair when suddenly there was a noise of talking outside upon the landing. The mice rushed back to their hole, and the dolls came into the nursery. What a sight met the eyes of Jane and Lucinda. Lucinda sat upon the upset kitchen stove and stared, and Jane leant against the kitchen dresser and smiled. But neither of them made any remark. The bookcase and the birdcage were rescued from under the coal box. But Hunkamunka has got the cradle and some of Lucinda's clothes. She also has some useful pots and pans and several other things. The little girl that the doll's house belonged to said, "I will get a doll dressed like a policeman." But the nurse said, "I will set a mouse trap." So that is the story of the two bad mice. But they were not so very, very naughty after all, because Tom Thumb paid for everything he broke. He found a crooked penny under the hearthrug, and upon Christmas Eve, he and Hunkamunka stuffed it into one of the stockings of Lucinda and Jane. And very early, every morning, before anybody is awake, Hunkamunka comes with her dustpan and her broom to sweep the dolly's house. The end. The Tale of Mrs. Tittlemouse. Once upon a time, there was a wood mouse, and her name was Mrs. Tittlemouse. She lived in a bank under a hedge. Such a funny house. There were yards and yards of sandy passages leading to storerooms and nut cellars and seed cellars all amongst the roots of the hedge. There was a kitchen, a parlor, a pantry, and a larder. Also, there was Mrs. Tittlemouse's bedroom, where she slept in a little box bed. Mrs. Tittlemouse was a most terribly tidy, particular little mouse, always sweeping and dusting the soft, sandy floors. Sometimes a beetle lost its way in the passages. "Shoo, shoo, little dirty feet," said Mrs. Tittlemouse, clattering her dustpan. And one day, a little old woman ran up and down in a red spotty cloak. "Your house is on fire, Mother Lady Bird. Fly away home to your children." Another day, a big fat spider came in to shelter from the rain.
"Beg pardon, is this not Miss Muffet's?"
"Go away, you bold, bad spider, leaving ends of cobweb all over my nice clean house." She bundled the spider out a window. He let himself down the hedge
which a long, thin bit of string. Mrs. Tittlemouse went on her way to a distant storeroom to fetch cherry stones and thistledown seed for dinner. All along the passage, she sniffed and looked at the floor. "I smell a smell of honey. Is it the cowslips outside in the hedge? I'm sure I can see the marks of little dirty feet." Suddenly, round a corner, she met Babbity Bumble. "Zzz, bzz, bzz," said the bumblebee. Mrs. Tittlemouse looked at her severely. She wished that she had a broom. "Good day, Babbity Bumble. I should be glad to buy some beeswax. What are you doing down here? Why do you always come in at a window and say, zzz, bzz, bzz?" Mrs. Tittlemouse began to get cross. "Zzz, whiz, whiz," replied Babbity Bumble in a peevish squeak. She sidled down a passage and disappeared into a storeroom which had been used for acorns. Mrs. Tittlemouse had eaten the acorns before Christmas. The storeroom ought to have been empty, but it was full of untidy, dry moss. Mrs. Tittlemouse began to pull out the moss. Three or four other bees put their heads out and buzzed fiercely. "I am not in the habit of letting lodgings. This is an intrusion," said Mrs. Tittlemouse. "I will have them turned out. Buzz, buzz, buzz. I wonder who would help me. Buzz, whiz, whiz. I will not have Mr. Jackson. He never wipes his feet." Mrs. Tittlemouse decided to leave the bees till after dinner. When she got back to the parlor, she heard someone coughing in a fat voice. There sat Mr. Jackson himself. He was sitting all over a small rocking chair, twiddling his thumbs and smiling, with his feet on the fender. He lived in a drain below the hedge, in a very dirty, wet ditch. "How do you do, Mr. Jackson? Deary me, you have got very wet." "Thank you, thank you, thank you, Mrs. Tittlemouse. I'll sit a while and dry myself," said Mr. Jackson. He sat and he smiled, and the water dripped off his coattails. Mrs. Tittlemouse went round with a mop. He sat such a while that he had to be asked if he would take some dinner. First, she offered him cherry stones. "Oh, thank you, Mrs. Tittlemouse. No teeth, no teeth, no teeth," said Mr. Jackson. He opened his mouth unnecessarily wide He certainly had not a tooth in his head. Then she offered him thistledown seed. Tiddly, widdly, widdly, poof, poof, puff, said Mr. Jackson. He blew the thistledown all over the room. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Mrs. Tittlemouse. Now what I really, really should like would be a little dish of honey.